Welcome to AfriBiz Talk, where we open the doors of doing business and investing in Africa. AfriBiz Talk is part of the AfriBiz and Global Biz Concierge brand families, which span the globe. To connect with us anytime, visit www.afribiz.info. Now let's tune in to hear the show in progress.
Welcome to AfriBiz Talk. This is Lori Elliott, your host, and we have elevated one of our frequent co-hosts. She's also our primary host, Kego Ayisi. And so today we're going to talk about the sad but happy state of African economies. And what do we mean by that? We simply mean that the conditions in the globe and on the continent are tightening and tightening and tightening, and there doesn't seem to be a way out. But in our opinion, this is the best opportunity that Africa has had in decades. So, Kego, how would you like to respond to that? What do you think about the sad but happy state of African economies?
Yes, the sad but happy state. You know, we all know that after the recession of 2007-2008, the countries in the West, you know, principally the United States, the UK, they all went into doing quantitative easing and zero interest rates to be able to, you know, because they thought economic recovery will come from there. But then it did something to African countries when you do quantitative easing and your central banks leaves interest rate at 0%, you're debasing your currency. Okay, it's not good for paper money. So people are just going to move money into commodities, into things like gold, oil, copper. And we know that the continent that produces commodities is Africa. We know that, yes, Australia and some Latin American countries produce commodities, but Africa has comparative advantage in that it's much more, apart from South Africa, every other African country is virgin territory, and it's very attractive for investors when you talk about commodities markets. So the zero interest rate drove up commodity prices, and we were seeing economic growth in African countries. You know, talking about the oil producers, the gold producers, even cash crop producers like people, you know, Cote d'Ivoire produces cocoa. So there was windfall. Okay, and even before the recession, we still, the global economy, you know, like the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan left interest rates at 1% for about a year or so. And that, you know, actually fed into the commodity boom in Sub-Saharan, in Africa. But what we're seeing is that, yes, Lori.
I was just going to say that, so this is a thing. So yes, that's definitely the West. So, but what was going on in Africa at this time? I mean, in terms of how were they responding to the opportunity that was created by the commodities boom?
Well, they were mainly, there was a lot of consumption going on. There was a resurgence of the middle class in Africa. So a lot of investment in retail, fast-moving consumer goods, housing, things like that. But the negative effect it had is that you had, you know, in terms of SME growth, small and medium enterprise growth, it wasn't good because it fed into, it's the same thing, you know, the government concentrating more on the commodities sector, and then they export commodities that are raw, that are not, you don't add value, they're not processed. Mm-hmm. So it was not good for manufacturing, for small and medium industries. So the real sector in Africa, agriculture, manufacturing, mining, the real sector was actually ignored. And because it was ignored in favor of the commodity boom, everyone operating in the real sector, especially SMEs, were not given opportunity to really grow, to really thrive as SMEs. The encouragement was not there. The environment, the government did not, you know, on the government level, making the business environment suitable for the real sector. The government just was not focused on that. They were focused on extractive industries. And the private sector also was not focused and on that as well. And because of that, we have a new generation of, a generation is gone, or a new generation of entrepreneurs across Africa who do not know how to create, how to develop sustainable ventures. They lack the skills.
Okay. So let's go back to the economic landscape before we get into that. So by the way, we can't speak for every country, although we can say that this is a major trend, okay? Particularly in those countries that had strong commodities, right? Oil, mm-hmm. you know, the mining, right? So then when we talk about this now, what's shifted in this past couple of years that now that commodities boom is now really a bust? What has changed in the last couple of years that has shifted this?
Well, what we're seeing now is that, first of all, number one, the countries in the West, they've kind of run out of ammunition. I think the Eurozone countries and Japan, they've been doing negative interest rates, and it's not working. The Federal Reserve is talking about doing negative interest. So quantitative easing, zero interest rates that drove up commodity prices and causing commodity boom in Africa and discouraging real sector activity is coming to an end. Okay. You're talking about the big countries like Nigeria, Angola, that have relied on oil exports for oil, because oil was over $100 per barrel, and the analysts or the experts in that area, actually what they're saying is it was because of all the quantitative easing and zero interest rate that drove up, you know, the oil prices above $100. So because now that ammunition is gone, it's going to be a while before oil comes up to even $80, $100. You know, for now, that oil model, depending on, like, for countries like Nigeria, Angola, they're beginning to realize that they have to shift into manufacturing, start looking for sustainable models for growth.
Okay.
You know, and perhaps a commodity boom served for a while, but when you're talking about sustainable growth, you have to go into making things, exporting, and earning foreign exchange for your country. And that goes back to the roots of, you know, having thriving SMEs and, you know, thriving manufacturing, having good sustainable ventures.
So again, let's, you know, staying on the economic issue of what's going on, because I think one factor that you have not mentioned is China. China is, you know, basically was also driving a lot of that commodities boom because there was a demand in their country. They needed the raw resources. And
they needed the raw resources.
Right. Yeah. And so now that they've begun to. Okay. So now that they have.
Consumer market.
Yeah. So now that they have. They're shifting their strategy because they have to in order to survive as an economy. It can't be export driven, mm-hmm. can't be based on commodities. They're trying to increase domestic consumption, and so and their growth has slowed. You know, and we still have to be careful of Chinese statistics because it's still very opaque. But you know, at points they were exceeding 10% per year in terms of growth.
Okay.
And now they're down to between 6% and 7%, and that's still really great for China. But the switch between, moving from commodities now to domestic consumption and the GDP growth slowing basically is creating a problem in Africa. Because China really, you know, helped push that commodities push in Africa. And the thing that, and so again, what we need to understand is This has put increasing pressure, these global shifts and things like that have really put an increasing amount of pressure on African economies. Now, the question is this a, short-term thing? Is this 6 months? Is it a year? And obviously, I think we both would agree, Kego, that we agree that this is not a short-term thing. It's probably a medium to long-term situation. First of all, with the commodities prices, oil prices, for example, that impact, not only Angola and Nigeria, but remember Ghana became an oil-producing country, and they've been depending on that revenue, for additional development. And so there are many countries that were relying, even South Sudan, who is currently going through, civil crisis. But, so there's oil, African economies were increasingly looking to oil to bring revenues. Mm-hmm. And which, I'm not saying that that wasn't a good idea, but again, they were putting their egg almost in one basket. And so that obviously now we see many of those countries that are experiencing the difficulty of that, of those decisions. So, and the other thing that I would say is that China, when we look at what they're doing, they're literally having to reform their economy, they're restructuring. And, when you look at what they're doing, it's going to really take at least 5 years for them to even to really come out of that. And so,
and the outcome is still very unpredictable.
Right. So, the tone is, what we're saying is that, it's not going to go back to the way it was, new things have to be done differently. And just looking at the news, just bringing this more, to the current state of things. So, we've been actually pretty quiet for the last couple of years, I think, Kego. I don't think we've really done any economic shows, but the thing that we're seeing that's very consistent is, like you said, first of all, that the from what we're seeing within Nigeria, what we're seeing in South Africa. In South Africa, they're affected by the commodities boom, but they're a much more diversified economy. Their issues had a lot to do with, how money was spent, just a lot of different things. And so basically what we're looking at is that they're, number one, the currencies are being affected dramatically by what's going on. When I was living in South Africa full time and left at the end of 2008, which was in the middle of the crisis, the rand to the dollar was about six rands. Okay, now it is fluctuating between 15 and 16. Okay. And so that one fact means that the value of the South African, economy in terms of currency, it means they've lost 2/3 of their value in the last, 7 or 8 years.
And
okay.
Yes, it just means, there's been job losses, the economy is not as efficient as it should be.
Right.
It's not growing as fast as it should be. There's increase in poverty.
Right. And the growth rate there now is less than 1%. They have been downgraded. They are close to being downgraded to junk status. And then in Nigeria, the story is different. Some of it's the same, some of it's different, but it had a lot to do with Nigeria's reliance on oil, right? And so what we're seeing is, and like I said, because we're based in South Africa and Nigeria, we, understand those economies, it's second nature for us to comment on those. But, we can say that, the scenarios are similar in other countries if you look across, the news headlines. And so, and this thing about the quantitative easing, and this is what I remember back in 2008, is that the only reason that the economies did not really crash globally is the fact that there was quantitative easing. They did not let the economies bottom out. And so basically, they've been propping it up all of this time, the global economy. And instead of many countries actually making structural changes to, in the way even that they did business in order to sustain and promote growth, they have basically relied on monetary policy, you know, as you were saying, right? So, and what's interesting is that, you know, I think we've been saying this all along, right? You know, this is all kind of perverted. It's going to run out at some point. And I don't even think that, the central bankers or anyone else that's in that sector didn't believe that it was going to run out as well. I think that they thought that somehow something would happen so it wouldn't get to this point. But you know, the news is that this came out of the G20 meeting last week, you know, that they were saying that, you know, monetary policy is not enough to revive the global economy, number one, right?
Yes.
The Bank of International Settlements, which is the central bank of the central banks, you know, issued a report saying that they were concerned.
There was need to look at
right, the negative interest rates, you know. So basically, there is no power to turn the tide for growth globally, okay, the way that it's been done. And so that is, of course, great concern because it affects economies that really cannot manipulate their currencies, right? I mean, the U.S., you know, China to some degree, everyone talks about free market, but it's not really free market. It's, you know, if you're more powerful, if you are involved in international trade to a great degree, you can, you know, do what you need to do with your currency, you know, in order to make sure that your domestic market still works. That's how I see it. So so the question then is, you know, really, it's really about growth. The issue has been, through all of this, how are you going to stimulate sustainable growth? Now, and I'm making these comments, and I'll let you make the comments on Nigeria. I'll make the comments on South Africa. So recently, you know, because of the dire situation, Pravin Gordhan, who was the former finance minister, was called back into service. And basically, the State of the Union, or State of the Nation, I'm sorry, I don't remember the precise name, that Jacob Zuma gave in mid-February basically reflected the fact that, hey, we got to do something with our economy. You know, we're in serious trouble. So then when Pravin Gordhan actually then talked about it, you know, I was reading the transcript, you know, and, it, you know, the man is probably doing the best that he can, and he's well-respected. And, you know, and he's got the savvy to manage, you know, a national budget, national finances, and whatever else. But the problem is that when you look at what he brought forward as the finance minister, he really didn't have an answer for growth. So, you know, they're cutting, they're looking at ways to increase the tax base, and all of that. But the key issue that seems to be prevalent pretty much everywhere is that they're not stimulating actual growth. They're looking at mechanisms to help them from bleeding, okay, you know, or hemorrhaging. But they haven't actually come up with strategies to, you know, to address the issue of growth. So, Kego, do you want to comment on Nigeria and kind of the state it's in terms of this same issue?
Yes. In Nigeria, everybody knows, well, Nigeria, first of all, the economy is diversified in terms of production, but it's a mono-revenue economy because oil still accounts for 85%. Now, everybody has known for some time now that there needs to be movement away from, you know, we need to diversify in terms of revenue. But then the new government, they kind of know, but there's really nothing on the ground. Like, there's no policy that is, everybody knows that we have to diversify. Everybody, you know, they admit that we have to do things differently. We have to stop reliance on oil and all that. But if you look at what the government is offering, there's really no consolidated policy, you know, really nothing that shows that, okay, this is, they don't have a plan how they're going to achieve this. And even sometimes, you know, occasionally, I think the president has talked about, alluded to hoping that the oil price will go up again, because maybe when they look at the situation on ground, you know, you feel overwhelmed, like in a country like Nigeria, it's so big and there's been neglect of the real sector for a long time. So to kind of get their hands dirty, start doing the work, they feel over, they don't know what to do. So sometimes they hope the oil price will just go back up. So there's nothing on ground, unfortunately, in terms of a plan to get things moving, to get the country out of the mess of the mono-revenue economy.
So, well, it's interesting. Okay, so the interesting thing is South Africa is different. They actually have a national development plan that the presidency, and I don't know if it first came through the ANC or, you know, it was done through the presidency or the government structures, but they actually have a national development plan. They've had that plan at least for, what, 3, maybe 4 years. You know, and a lot of these plans, by the way, they're not necessarily bad. Okay, they have issues with implementation. In fact, South Africa, they've had plenty of money. They, you know, were flush with cash. They were, you know, in good position, you know, all through the commodities boom. Even in 2008, you know, they were good. They had solid, you know, a solid treasury. You know, the finance minister, you know, the central bank was handling things as they needed to handle them. So, you know, a lot of what we're seeing is, there seems to be a loss of in translation, you know, how to take this stuff, the policies and the plans, you know, and actually get them implemented. Now, you know, when I look at Nigeria, for example, you know, from what you've been, you know, telling me over a period of time, you know, what I continue to see, and to be truthful, I mean, it's not just African countries. We still see this. Brazil, you know, is in junk status. You know, we just see a lot of things because people were basically, or governments were basically driving things on artificial instruments, okay? Mm-hmm. Which means that the real economy, things that would promote and cause the growth, you can't cause something to grow if it's not living. Right. And so artificial instruments that are just monetary paper money, right, that are not backed by actual assets, basically is a pyramid scheme. Okay. And so, you know, and so if that is what you're using to promote the growth, then you're going to be in trouble at some point. And I think what we're seeing is we're seeing that. And so definitely the West perpetuated it. But to some degree, I also believe that because, you know, I won't say who originally started all this back and forth, but I think in general, if any country could do what the West does with their currency, like the European Union, they would do it because they think that that's what works. And what we're hoping is that's the sad state. That's why African countries, you know, are in the place that they're in. You know, it looks, you know, the United States looks like it's, you know, doing okay, but in reality, you know, we still have the same problem of, you know, we're getting better jobs reports, you know, in terms of the increase in jobs, but we still have that same issue of there is no policy to handle any global disruption of the financial economy, the economies, right? There is no instrument left. Mm. There is no power in those financial instruments, the monetary policies. There is none left. They really haven't. They didn't have power before, but it looked like they had power. Okay, and so now things are starting to be shown for what they are. So, really, when we talk about, you know, the African economies are fragile, but actually the entire global economy is fragile right now. And so, so I think that this is, you know, that's the sad state of things, obviously, for Africa. And, you know, I was, again, looking at another story. I don't know if it was the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, but they were talking about Zambia, you know, that was a huge copper producer in Kitwe. Basically, you know, the copper revenue was creating opportunities, jobs, you know, middle class, you know, all sorts of stuff, just like what you said.
It's the same story all over Africa with the mines and, you know, the commodities. So,
you know, so
and
So they were reliant on, and there's nothing wrong with relying on where you have strength. So it's good that you, you know, when the boom was there, it was good that you were developing and had things, you know, related to mining, and that caused, you know, growth in your country. But, you know, that's not a resilient economy to rely on.
Well,
one
I'll give
sector.
You an example. I'll give you an example of mistake that not just African countries make. When Ghana discovered oil, I think it was Tullow, I don't know, one of the smaller oil companies, they first of all overestimated how many barrels that they would get. And then the Ghanaian government, even before, you know, the oil started, they ran and they enlarged the size of government. They hired more people, you know, and they started getting it. You know how government operates, because they were expecting this oil money. Now Ghana has been in a recession since 2012-13. The economy has not been doing well, and they've not lived up to all the expectations, what was expected. Now, the oil, when they started selling the oil, they saw that, you know, there was an overestimation of how many barrels they would get, and then the global economy not very stable. And then they hired more people that they cannot fire. You know, the government anywhere in the world, if it's a private company, they'll fire people. But the government never does that. So because, you know, they're stuck in a rut now, you know, because of. So this is an example that governments across Africa and indeed in the world, you know, make. When you know, you're supposed to rein in your spending, save, and then, you know, invested in things that would encourage growth, sustainable growth.
So, and of course, there are other issues of, you know, inefficiency, waste, misallocation, and even underutilization of some funds that may have been, you know, implementation is still a really huge issue in many African countries and ministries, and then also corruption. You know, I mean. Yeah, so in the standpoint of where, you know, money leaves the government, you know, some magical way, right? And again, and this is not just an Africa problem, okay? Because they're now in this huge scandal in Brazil.
In China as well. Members from the communist government, I was reading an article some years back, they've carted off as much as $20 billion, even more, in Russia. Is the same thing.
Yeah.
And
in the Western countries, so these are emerging and frontier markets. But the thing is, in the Western markets, this happens as well, but it's not done. People have learned to, you know, work around this. Now, that's not to say that, you know, I won't say that most companies try to, you know, live up to those expectations, but people have basically accepted that they feel that there's a way around, you know, things, and that's what leads to corruption and bribery. So this is, you know, and so the illicit flows of money, you know, out of the continent, out of countries is very real. It may be prevalent in Africa because of, you know, the colonial history and certain things, you know, but it's not an African phenomenon. That's one thing we have to realize. There's corruption in when you think about, and corruption may not even be money, but to me, corruption is, for saying, you know, reporting false financials, like in Enron, which was many years ago in the United States, you know, reporting, you know, doing things that basically are a lie, right, for the sake of money. And so it may not be the same type of corruption in, you know, Africa, per se, you know, that's talked about, but, you know, it is some form of perversion of what's supposed to be. So, so, you know, there's so many different factors that really are putting pressure, you know, from a global perspective and in the African economies themselves. And the key question, you know, that everyone still has is, you know, where is the growth? You know, where are we going to get the growth? Now, you know, if you listened to African governments, not necessarily all of them, but, you know, many or enough of them, you know, understood we need to diversify, you know, we need to, you know, help SMEs because they're such a large portion of, you know, our economy, you know, in terms of creating jobs. And, you know, SMEs also tend to be a little bit more resilient. Those that are entrepreneurial, you know, when things get bad and all of that. And so the equation now is, the question is, this is a very sad state for Africa, you know, when you look at all these circumstances. But, you know, I think, you know, we both agree, I know, that this is actually a happy time. because things are so bad, it is hopeful that there will be a turning of the tide in the countries to do what's needed to do in order to really create sustainable growth. Now, let me just make one comment about Nigeria. In it might have been 4 weeks ago, but I think it was either the Minister of Communication, but it was one of the key senior cabinet officials that said that he wished that the oil price would actually go down to 10, you know, to zero or $10, right? So literally the country would no longer look to oil at all. Now, it wasn't, you know, the fact that he wanted to destroy the economy, but he was saying is that the mindset, you know, about, you know, what is going to help us out of this is oil. And, you know, and again, like you said, the reliance, you know, on oil really became, it was a blessing, but also became a curse, because people in banks in the private sector all just worked towards the oil sector, right? Mm-hmm. And so now they're having a struggle, you know, shifting to the things that really should have been done a long time ago, when they actually were flush, you know what I'm saying, when the government was flush with cash. And so, you know, now it's a question of how do you create sustainable growth? So I think that, you know, for us, you know, we've been actually talking to people a long time. This is not an I told you so thing. It's, you know, hopefully an opportunity for, you know, government and private sector to kind of wake up, basically, you know, and say, okay, this is the situation. It is not going to change anytime soon. So how are we actually going to thrive during this time? And the thing, the beautiful thing is, if they learn how to thrive when it's like this, imagine what it'll be like when, you know,
when things get better.
Exactly. So for us, I think, you know, when we look at this, you know, you're the economist, and I call myself an amateur economist, but I'm enthusiastic about macroeconomics. Mm-hmm. So, I, like I said, when I read these things, it actually pains me to see this happen. Because to me, a lot of the things that make it work, make an economy work and sustainable and inclusive, are not really that difficult to do. What's difficult?
Yeah, this was totally avoidable.
Yeah, that's I think that's my whole point. Yeah, I mean, I think for us, that's the sad state of this, is that this was totally avoidable. So we're just going to spend, you know, this is not to talk about, this session is really not to talk about, you know, the different sustainable growth strategies that we see, more just commenting on the economic environment and the shift that needs to happen. But I just think in closing that we will just, you know, give, you know, a few thoughts as to what we think, you know, is critical, you know, during this time frame. So I'll start, and then Kego, I'll let you close us out. So I think the first thing is that there are actually vast resources in many of these countries, and and they have not yet learned. And again, this is not an indictment, you know, with African economies, because this really happens in many places. Okay, they have not yet realized how to transform those raw assets into something that is of value, that other people will, you know, work alongside of you to further develop. The second point is that there is, again, a lack of coordinated, synergized collaboration. Yes, there are groups that are working together, they're making progress, but there literally is not a strategic, structural approach. Now, for me, just from a pragmatic or practical perspective, to me, instead of, you know, we have government agencies, and maybe Rwanda is a little bit better, and this is, I only have a little bit of understanding about how they've operated, but basically, even though they each had cabinet positions, they had basically a very strategic way in which they worked together, and they worked across the sectors. So there was actually a lot of collaboration, and it was a requirement. Kagame required them to work this way, and so there was a lot of cross-pollinization, or cross-pollination, excuse me. And so, you know, so things like that is what we need to see more and more, and I believe we still need to even go beyond that, but what we see still is very hierarchical approaches to, you know, to these issues. And so, so basically, you know, to me, to unlock the growth is the first thing that needs to be done is figure out how to coordinate and collaborate around resources and learn how to then get more from what you already have in order to address some of these issues of growth. I think the policies, you know, some of the policies are not necessarily all that bad. There may be the business environment may be bad. The, you know, the monetary policy might not be that great. But I do think that there are policies in several of these countries, in fact, probably many of them, that are actually halfway decent. It's just in how they're implemented. And outside of the business environment and the monetary policy, there are still ways to succeed is what we're trying to say. It's really a concerted effort. It's not just the monetary policy or, you know, or the business environment that causes success or, you know, or prevents it. Because in the worst situations, when communities work together, they can thrive. So so that for me is one of the big pieces. Kago, did you want to add to that in conclusion?
Yes, in conclusion, I think that as far as economic growth development goes, you know, you use the resources that you have, not what you wish you had or you're dreaming of having. So a lot of African countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Nigeria especially, they have a lot of resources at their disposal. Okay, they have, I mean, what do you need to grow? You need land, labor.
Right.
You need capital. They have these things. Okay, mm-hmm. they have their, you know, if you're talking about supporting entrepreneurship, you know, in a country like Nigeria, in Ghana, they have educational institutions. They have government agencies that actually have some resources that could help in the development efforts. You know, they have central banks, they have export promotion, import promotion, training funds. There are lots of government agencies that if they coordinated better would help their human resources. So it's when you actually look, but a lot of these resources, they're not put to use just because of, like we're talking about, the neglect of the real sector. Yeah, because of the commodities boom. But when you start using something, you can get more out of it. You can right. improve it. You can. So our, you know, the educational institutions are in very bad shape. They've been neglected. You know, the government agencies don't work well. They're very inefficient. There's, you know, corruption. The entrepreneurs we have are great, but they don't have, you know, things at their disposal to make them, you know, sharper. Okay, that we have resources in, you know, their commodities. Laurie, you've always talked about Africa using some of the gold they have in the ground, some of these resources, to use it to their advantage to grow their economies,
right,
instead of just dealing with liquid cash. So they have to look inwards and start using some of these old inefficient things they have not been using. And once you start using something, it gets better mm-hmm. with time. So they have to stop all this approach, using expensive approach. You have resources, instead you prefer to go abroad and get this and get that, instead of, you have to start where you are.
Right.
And then the ones, the people abroad will take you seriously.
Yep.
And you know, it has a lot of implications because, you know, like Nigeria, people in Africa, people in government, they won't, for example, the government officials, it's not an indictment, you know, they don't want to use the local hospitals. They fly their families abroad for treatment. How are you going to know how the local hospitals function if, you know, you don't go to the same hospitals where your constituents go to? If you're talking about the educational institutions, to start supporting, you know, the ecosystem in terms of entrepreneurial development, they're going to have to reactivate some labs that have been misused, or, you know, the money for running the labs has been embezzled. They're going to have to be more transparent, more responsible in the way they operate. So it's going to take some changing of the psyche, some pain. It's going to, but that's the only option left now, because the global economy is, you know.
So I think the first thing that we would probably agree on, and, you know, I mean, basically, you know, we've been doing this for, well, I've been in this 12 years, you know, and you've been in, I mean, probably the same amount in terms of African economics, but just really looking at, you know, how do you cause growth and how do you sustain it? And so we do have a lot of things that we will be able to discuss at another point in time. But I think here, I mean, the first lesson is that you use the resources that you have available to you, and you leverage those resources. And when you're in a community or in a nation, you learn how to pool and synergize those resources first, right? Because that actually means that you're coming from a position of strength instead of a weak position. That is one of the things. So even though the environment's bad and whatever else, learning how to strategically allocate and combine and configure those resources so you come from a position of strength. Because with anything, you have to be careful. So, and again, you know, one of the things, you know, we're not against government at all. In fact, we're very supportive of government, but in its proper function, right? But the thing that we find,
you know, I was
often
reading a book of history book, and they said that the British government's bureaucracy was the best in the 1800s, probably more efficient than it is now today. Mm-hmm. It was very small, very efficient, very nimble. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was around the time of the Industrial Revolution, but they were very efficient, very effective.
Yeah. So, you know, so when we look, you know, and the reason why we're also cautioning, you know, from an economic perspective is, you know, we're seeing that the countries are going out again to get debt from foreign investors. Or, I'm sorry, not foreign investors, but like the IMF, you know, the World
from
Bank.
China.
And, right. And again, I'm not, you know, you use any instrument that's available to you at the proper time and the proper place. Okay? So there is a time when you can
do
that.
The thing about, yeah, sorry, Laurie.
the proper time and proper place. So for us, why I say that it's not the proper time, it may look bad because you need cash, right? But you need to actually inventory your resources, right? Figure out how you pool them together and figure out how you can leverage those resources to get what you need. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Then you can go out and then say, okay, we have these resources, there's a gap. Now, obviously, I think to a certain extent, the governments already do that, but I think that they need to be more creative, like we talked about. You know, that they're raw resources that if they put a little bit of development money in, they might be able to really leverage those resources to get funds to develop different things and not really get themselves into a strong debt cycle. And the reason why there's concern is because the Western currencies are so strong up against the African currencies. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you start taking on debt in this type of environment, you know, for every dollar that you get, you know, you know, or you're borrowing, you're actually having to pay back twice as much, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that is a lot of, you know, so these are things that, and, it, you know, it's not something that gets solved overnight. You can create a system so that you can begin to do this on an ongoing basis in a sustainable manner. But what we're just saying is that there has to be a deeper look at how to do and cause growth in the current context. The old way of doing it is not going to work. And so, you know, what we're seeing is we're seeing repeat patterns that have happened over and over again, and there isn't a lot of necessary innovation. Now, I will say that Kenya has actually done something. I forgot what it's called, so you'll please have to excuse me. But they actually have an instrument from the IMF that it's not actually a loan. It's just a standby facility, right? So,
okay.
So if they fall into a really bad crunch, they can actually then dip into it, and they're using different IMF instruments. And so basically it's kind of an innovation. And so from what I just, again, from news reports, I'm seeing that other countries are considering those types of things. So there is some innovation, but again, they're going outside to find their strength, right? To find what they need. They're not doing enough to see what they have locally to use, to do the development, to help drive that growth. And that's really what we're saying. A country cannot survive in any environment where you continually look outward, right, for your solution. Your solution first comes from the inside. And until
inside,
you learn...
And even, yeah.
And all I was saying, and if you don't do that, and if you don't do that well, you're always going to be, you know, basically at the... how would I put it? You're going to be on the bottom end of the curve instead of the top.
You're going to be disadvantaged.
Right.
Yes,
right.
And that was what I was going to say about the debt issue is that looking at the pattern, I can easily predict, you know, just from recent Africa economic history that all these debts that they want to take on now again, I know there's been some history, they won't repeat some things. They're not going to use it properly. It's not intentional, but before you, I mean, if you think about it in business, okay, before you're a businessman, before you go out and take on any debt, you have to be at a certain place. You have to, like you said, take an inventory. You have to know where you are, what you need, why you're taking that debt, so that when you get it, it is used properly. And we know normally with government, their priorities are not efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're going to have other things, propaganda campaigns and all that, that they're going to use that debt money for. And we know that the debt model really doesn't, you know, if it's from private investors, okay, you have to have a plan how to pay it back, but eventually you'll default. But you know, if it's aid and, you know, so it's going back to that cycle. I'm just saying that a lot of these countries, even Nigeria, they're not even articulating the issue, you know, why they should be going into debt. Because a country like Nigeria, there's so many things in the economy, the leakages, okay, the subsidies, the inefficiency in agriculture, some parts of the agriculture policy, infrastructure. There's so many things you can, they were going to China for $20 billion. There's so many things in Nigeria that they would cut, not even so many, one or two things, and they would easily get that money.
Yeah.
And it's like that for other African countries. So they just need to be creative, innovative, look inwards, look for new solutions. You don't have to go to China for that money.
Yep. And again, we're not necessarily saying, because, you know, at times people do need outside help. You know, that's, but what we're saying is there's a culture of doing that, right? And
yeah,
there's a culture, right, right.
So you don't disadvantage yourself and...
Right. And really what it comes down to it, and I think this kind of goes back to the monetary policy, it's easy money. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You just go ask someone to give you money to get yourself out of
instead of doing what you ought to do, because like for Nigeria, it's easy to go to China to get the money or to go to the IMF than to cut the petroleum subsidy, for instance, poly, or looking and cut some because it's,
yep.
You know,
and reallocate resources. Right, and reallocate
resources,
some of the resources.
Yes.
Right.
So for them, it's a lot of work that they don't really care. They don't want to do it. So yeah, they just go out and borrow money.
So you know, so what we're saying is that we need to have a virtuous cycle, a new cycle, that, you know, and what we see is that this is a great opportunity for that to happen. I mean, it is sad, you know, that there that many countries are in this state, but at the same time, it's happy because, you know, it because it's dire enough
now. They can do things differently now.
Right, right. So,
opportunity is there.
Yep. And so we're actually very bullish on Africa. We think it's, you know, going to go well outside. I mean, the thing is, again, we're looking at the issue that many investors are pulling money out of Africa. Not necessarily because of Africa, but just because their appetite, things are shifting, right? And so basically, you know, some of the biggest mining companies that are in Africa are now junk status. I don't know if it was, it's not BHP Billiton, but, you know, I was just looking, Anglo American, BHP Billiton, I don't know about Rio Tinto, you know, but they're being downgraded, you know? So I, you know, again, I think this is something, again, if you're going to grow, you have to have a system to understand where you are and where you need to go. And you really need to be able to evaluate and leverage what you have and then move out to other things. Okay. And so that is, you know, that's not really an economics thing. It's really a strategy thing. You know, that's
strategy,
what business, that's what businesses do. Government needs to do it, not for the same reasons, not in the same context, but really, you know, all organizations or any group that's representing people, period, business, civil society, they all need to understand how to really leverage their resources and work together. And so that's the first level of what I would call sustainable growth strategy is, you know, really understand your resources, learn how to operate out of those strengths, you know, and thirdly, you know, as we've been saying, you know, learn how to work together. And then when you need to go, you're in a better position to really use the resources that you're getting. You know, instead of just, you know, asking, you know, to help you get out of this time, because it's not this thing about oil. And again, not picking on Nigeria and South Africa. It's just that we know more of the environment in those two countries, is that the, you know, the idea that oil is going to go back up and you're going to have the flush cash that you had the last, what, 10 years or since 2007, 2008. That's not going to come back for, even if it gets up to that level, for 2 or 3 years. You know, many of these countries are hurting because they didn't have any mechanisms to anticipate this. They just assumed that things were going to continue the way it was. They were not actually looking at the signs because there were signs all around. So,
yeah.
But anyways, yeah. So again, it's a sad but very happy state. in African economies. Kego, did you want to say anything else in closing?
The key thing here is that hopefully the governments will actually do something, not just say all the right sounding things and not do anything about it as they always do. Will not be lip service about, okay, wanting to do things differently.
Yep. And I think what will be interesting in Nigeria is when they finally approved a budget, you know, to see what that actually is, and to see how they're going to implement off of that. So South Africa's already done their budget, so but we're still waiting for Nigeria's budget to come out, which should hopefully be coming out this month in March.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for us today at AfriBiz Talk. This was Lori Elliott and Kego Iesi with AfriBiz, and we look forward to having you with us on our next show. Signing off.
That's it for this episode of AfriBiz Talk. Join us to continue the conversation at www.afribiz.info.